Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Politics, politics, politics. It sounds so boring until you realize every decision a politician makes has an effect on your life. And that is why we've got to pay attention to them. And as you all know out there, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. So we're going to learn some history today. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT 1690 AM. Every Monday to Friday, please join us here on KDMT. And you can follow us at theamerichicks.com, and our Facebook is AmeriChicks as well. Kimmy and I are sleuths for truth. And we don't just trust what our politicians tell us. We're digging in to find out what they're saying, why they're saying it, what's the real effect on real people when they pass certain policies. And then, is what they're doing fitting into the framework of what we hired them for? Yes, the government works for we, the people. We don't work for them. They're not smarter than we are. And we've got to make sure that we keep up with what they're doing and keep them in the little box that we put them in.
You know, Molly, I was thinking about all the stuff that we do. There's a reason I have these bags under my eyes.
Oh, they look great. You should get some shoes to match.
Yeah, I think I will. Yeah. What'd you say? The color would be concealer?
Concealer beige.
But I realize as we've been going to all of these different meetings that you and I are really lobbyists, if you will, for the little guy. We're lobbyists for the regular guy.
Yeah.
When we get to these meetings, very seldom do you see regular, everyday people represented.
Right.
And that's something that we do.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I agree. So we are going to talk today first about some things that are taking place just federally and locally here as well in Colorado. And then we're going to move over and talk to Keith Nobles. He is going to explain to us a little story, a little history about the Native Americans in our country and what happened to their constitutional rights, and kind of explain why it's important for us to make sure that all constitutional rights are protected, and every single rule that we pass that's in this Constitution is adhered to all the time for every group equally. Because once our government starts to look the other way and not apply rules to all of us, then we get in trouble. And just because they didn't come after you this time, it still means you could be next. Because once we let the government get outside of their box, everybody's fair play, right?
Well, it is truly across the spectrum. And Keith really knows something about this. His grandmother was Cherokee Indian, so he certainly understands this. He comes from Oklahoma, and I'm really looking forward to this because it's something I've always, you know, really been curious about. And I think you're kind of talking about constitutional rights for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's created equal.
Yep.
Everybody should be treated equally.
Yep.
And we have all kinds of things going on, Molly, right now with government picking winners and losers. And one of those that's coming up here is that the city of Denver is going to do a pilot program to ease the rent burden in the city of Denver. Now, and they're doing this along with the Downtown Denver Partnership, the Apartment Association of the Metro Mayors. And what's happening here is, once again, government has created a problem,
mm-hmm.
and that is that we can't build condos.
Right.
I really don't think that they're serious about doing this construction defect legislation, because right now you've got developers that are building boxes for people to live in up and down the light rail corridor, and the rents are pretty exorbitant. And so now everybody whines that, hey, you know, the rents are too expensive. And so now the remedy here is that the city of Denver is going to make up a difference between what they think somebody should pay, what the real rate is. And so the taxpayer is going to pay that amount to the developer. And I just can't believe that. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me.
Well, and I'd like to get back to Economics 101. And so I hope that we've got some politicians listening. And maybe if you know one, you can share the story with them. But let's talk about Economics 101, supply and demand. If you have high demand for your apartments because they're so good, they're great, they're in a great area, everybody wants to work there, everybody wants to live there, then you can just get those rates and you can increase until people stop buying them. When people can't afford to live in your apartment complex anymore, they won't. And then you will need to lower your prices to get more people in it. Supply and demand. That's the way the market works. Now, if the government comes in and says, well, and I read this DBJ article you're talking about, Kim, today. If the government comes in and says, well, we've got to help some of these apartment complex owners because they're not filling all of their units. So we're going to help them fill their units by giving money and subsidizing certain people to move into those units. Then that's going to encourage these owners of the apartment complexes to rise those rates.
College tuition.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What incentive would the owners of those apartment complexes have to lower rates if they're always going to be guaranteed, there's always going to be someone that can afford to live there because they're given government money? Exactly the same as school loans. That's why the prices keep going up, because when the government guarantees something with the rest of our money, the price never goes down. Mm-hmm. The free market works. Let it work. If people want to live downtown, they will. Not everybody wants to live downtown. And it's not the government's job to take our money and force people in here.
Well, and the other thing that I think people forget is over here on this economic development side, you've got government giving some companies incentives to bring in employees. So it's not a true free market. And so, in essence, we're subsidizing those employers, we're subsidizing these developers, and then you see politicians and bureaucrats go, oh, we are so prosperous, look at all the building cranes. I would submit to you that it's a bit of a fake prosperity.
Absolutely. And they say they're doing it to help the little guy, but you know what? They're helping the big guy, because the person who owns that apartment complex wants this to happen. It's crony capitalism. Because if we're going to keep giving this money to the owners, private owners of these apartment complexes, that's padding their pocket. Why don't we allow the people that have the best idea for the best apartment complex to get the best people to live there? And if people don't want to live there, they'll lower the rates. There's a reason the free market works. There's a reason the people are smarter than big government. That's why we got to keep talking. Stick with us. It's the AmeriChicks. We'll be right back. If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender. Sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Today, you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the American sent you.
Are we the people smarter than big government?
Yes,
yep.
We are.
We think so. We think so. Mm-hmm. Let's keep proving it and keep the discussion going. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And in studio with us, we have Keith Nobles with InsurgentTribe.com, and he is a Cherokee Indian. He is going to be sharing some information with us on the history of Native Americans and why holding our government accountable to treat everybody equally under the law is important. Welcome, Keith.
Good to see you.
Thanks for being here. Before we get to that, let's continue a little bit with some local news. I want to ask you all a question here.
Okay.
You know, we were talking in the first section about economics 101 and supply and demand, and our government doesn't seem to understand. And this is at the local level. This is Denver City Council that's going to be making a decision soon. But they're talking about putting together a pilot program to ease the rent burden on we the people by actually giving all of our money to owners, really, of apartment complexes so that they can fill any open spots they have with low-income individuals who can't afford to pay for it themselves. So they get subsidies, which is going to allow apartment complex owners to ratchet up prices. Mm-hmm. Okay? So
somebody that doesn't want to take government subsidies, they're trying to make it on their own. What this does is it increases the rent that they're going to have to pay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another Econ 101 I want to talk about, and I would love anyone who's running for office to prove they know this, and anyone who's in office to get back to this, budgeting, okay? When at home, we have to balance our checkbooks, right? And so you can't spend more than you have coming in, right? Okay. So same thing takes place with the government. Now, when we give you money, let's say for transportation for our roads and our bridges, which we do, we expect you, Colorado and the federal government, to spend that money wisely on the roads, which is what we are paying you to do. Now, we have witnessed here in Colorado that our government's not spending the money on the roads. They're spending it on all kinds of things, all kinds of other transportation, on bike paths, on bike parking, and taking away regular parking spaces for we the people. And that's not good. So number one, I just want to see on budgeting, government, spend the money that we give you on what we say, transportation. And then if you spend that wisely, you can come back for more. But they didn't do that, and now we're talking about possibly coming back for more money, and they're coming up with creative ways. So, Kim, you know, we just saw this article. State Senator Ray Scott is planning to bring forward a bicycle tax bill in Colorado. Oregon has done it. They are taxing you. I think it's $15, kind of a registration fee, just like your cars, if you have a bike that's $200 or more, and that money would go towards the roads. Now, I am all for everybody paying their fair share. I think that they shouldn't have to come to any of us for a bicycle or a car tax up and above the regular tax we're paying. Anyways, if they spend it wisely, they wouldn't need to, but they have. So I'm curious, Randy and Kim, your thoughts on this. Do you think that bikers should be allowed to use the same roads and bridges that the cars do, even if they don't pay an additional tax on their bike? Or do you think that they should have some skin in the game because they're using the roads too?
Well, Keith, what do you think?
I think that we're spending far too much money on things like RTD, which is losing ridership and trying to spend ever more money to recover it. If we rediverted that money back toward the roads, we would have a situation where everybody could pay a lot less taxes to use the roads.
Yep.
Well, Molly, you know what my answer is going to be. I really do think that everybody needs to have some skin in the game. And what has been happening is politicians and bureaucrats have been going to we the people and saying, oh, we realize that your roads and bridges are important. And so we have this user tax. We have this gas tax. We have a federal gas tax. We have a state sales tax, state gas tax. And that money is supposed to go to the roads and bridges. What has been happening, and there's actually even legislation in Colorado on the books that says that they can divert, I think it's anywhere from, I think it's 10 to 20% of the gas tax money for other multimodal types of transportation. And then you have Mayor Hancock just came out within the last 10 days or so and said he's going to spend $2 billion.
Billion.
Billion, that's with a B. Again, they're calling this multimodal. And ultimately what it is it's to get people out of their cars. And we were talking during break. I was downtown for a conference this weekend and got out of the conference, gone down by myself, and was going to go home. And I was glad that I was able to go get into my safe car and drive home, you know, and not worry about any, I felt safe. I don't think that I would have felt safe at 11 o'clock at night on a bus or on my bicycle driving or riding from downtown or on light rail. And I don't think that it's government. I don't think government bureaucrats and politicians should be trying to manipulate what my choices are going to be. And they do that by taking money and diverting it. Now, interestingly enough, you posted this Denver Post article regarding Representative Scott's his idea. He's starting to float about
it. Oh, you were looking at the Americhicks Facebook page?
Well, actually, what I was seeing was all these notifications coming through.
Oh, good deal. Okay.
It's an argument that I heard even when I was in Lone Tree City Council. People have said, well, I pay my taxes on my car. I pay my gas tax. So I shouldn't have to pay a bicycle tax. Well, it's like, wait a minute. You know, I think that there are people that totally rely on bicycles. I think that they should have some skin in the game as well, right? I mean, when we talk about, you know, those on the left talk about fair share, you know, skin in the game, you know, I'm not sure they're really serious about it with what I'm seeing from some of these Facebook posts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're still using the roads. And so, you know, when you say, well, I don't use it, so I think that you should have to pay a tax, that's like we're legislating that other people should have to pay a tax, other people should be restricted, other people should have to buy Obamacare, not Congress, though, not them, it's not good for them. Right. So we want all the rules to apply to everybody, the taxes to apply to everybody, everything.
And the taxes, to your point, Molly, the taxes, if government says the taxes are going to the roads and bridges, everyday people believe that's what the case is. And I was actually shocked when I figured out that that is not the case.
Yeah. So anyway, check it out. We want to hold the government accountable for where they're spending our money. And we want to make sure everybody is equal under the law. So let's talk about...
kind of change gears.
Huh? Changing gears, but it's still talking about equality of all people under the law. And the government, you know, enforcing the law for all people. So... Ronald Reagan said the 9 most terrifying words. I'm with the government and I'm here to help. And you know, you see the billboards, especially always around election time, and mm-hmm. you've got somebody knocking on the door, and you've got like the American Indians are standing there, and they're like, "Oh, I'm from the government. I'm here to help." Why is that such an important picture to paint in people's minds? What did the federal government do to the Native Americans that that should scare the heck out of us and encourage us all to want our Constitution to be followed? Keith Nobles, welcome to the AmeriChicks. You're Cherokee Indian. You're with InsurgentTribe.com. You are talking about this all the time. Let's start a little bit with a brief history on the Native Americans in America.
Let me clear up a couple of basic misconceptions most people have.
Okay.
Indian is a legal status that derives from Article 1 of the Constitution. It's not a race. It's not a culture. It's not a history. There's 567 federally recognized Indian nations, and we all have different culture, different racial makeups. We all have different histories, different case laws. We all have a distinct legal status that is different from each and every other nation. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
So Indian is my legal status. Cherokee is what I am.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Got it. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And a lot of people think, well, Indian is Indian, and that's not what it is.
Okay.
So to start on it.
So one other question, though, in the definitions, then where's Native American?
You know, some people prefer Indian. Some people prefer Native American. Some people prefer Indigenous. All those terms have their own baggage, and none of them are really accurate. Because we are really 567 separate groups of people.
Okay.
That are distinct. But Indian is the legal status.
Is the legal status. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Okay. So I prefer Indian because it's the legal status. It's what the Constitution says. That's just what it is.
Okay.
But it's important to understand, Indian is a legal status, not a race or a culture or a history.
Got mm-hmm. it. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what happened with the Native Americans when Americans... Well, I guess should we start at the American Revolutionary War, or
well,
where do we
actually
start?
Just a little bit before.
Okay.
So British, French, Spanish were here, and they were primarily interested in extracting wealth and taking it back to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the primary gist of their relationship with the Indian nations. Not that some terrible things didn't happen. They did. But that was their real focus, was extracting wealth. When the American Revolution came along and the United States what became the United States, won the revolution. That changed. They were not interested in extracting wealth. They were interested in going west. And what was west? We were. Mm-hmm. And it produced conflicts and tension and war. And part of the United States Constitution, when they finally got around to drafting that after the Articles of Confederation, was to try and find a way to solve that problem. That was Article 1. Says the Congress shall have power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. And that's commonly assumed, including by the Supreme Court, to mean the sovereignty of the Indian nations. So the federal government can regulate the relationship between the United States and the Indian nations, but constitutionally, they do not have the power to regulate the Indian nations, what goes on internal to them.
Okay.
The other part is Article 6. This Constitution and the laws of the United States will should be made in pursuance of, and all treaties made, of which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. And what that says in shorthand is treaties are the law of the land. So there's other parts of the Constitution. Indians are mentioned. Indians are not to be taxed. Government voided that in 1924, and that we are exempt from the 14th Amendment. But these are really the parts that matter right now. So with these in mind, and with this situation of tension, war, people moving west, George Washington developed the first Indian policy. It was commonly called acculturation.
Acculturation.
And it's not, this form of acculturation wasn't the dirty word it would later become. But the whole idea behind George Washington's policy, and it was really more of a notion than what we would today call a policy, was invite the Indians in to become Americans and allow them to still be Indians. So we'll fulfill the constitutional requirements of sovereignty, we'll uphold the treaties, but let's invite these people into the family.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make them Americans. So this is probably the most rational Indian policy we have ever had in this country. And after 13 years, 1894, when Washington first pitched it to us, the Cherokee.
In 1794.
In 1807, we sent Major Ridge to the White House, and he told Thomas Jefferson, we accept the offer. The Cherokee will become Americans. So we were the first nation to accept this offer.
Okay.
And we were followed by the Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Seminole. So five of us.
Okay. So before we go forward, we're gonna go to a break and then we'll come back. But basically we have Keith Nobles in studio. He's Cherokee Indian. He's with insurgenttribe.com. Check out the website. We're talking about the Constitution and what happened after the American Revolutionary War. Americans actually decided they were going to stay in America and they wanted to move west. And we wanted to make sure that we were getting along with the Native American Indians. We weren't hurting them. We weren't taking their stuff. They could have their sovereignty. They wrote into the Constitution, Article 1 and 6, to protect the Native American Indians. But then we thought, well, let's invite them to join us. And so we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll continue from there. Stick with us. We're the AmeriChicks.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, July 21st, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Spider-Man Homecoming, Valerian, and Baby Driver. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Please be sure to visit the delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
How long has our federal government been ignoring the Constitution?
Is that a rhetorical question?
When did it first happen? When was the first time? There's always a first time.
The next day, I bet there were some people trying to think about what they could do.
You know, when you look at our government right now and their overreach, you think, how did we get here? We're going back to the first time, the very first time. We have in studio with us Keith Nobles. He is a Cherokee Indian, and he has insurgenttribe.com website. Check it out. And this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, on 1690 AM. We are talking about, really, the history of Native American Indians previous to the United States, and then their rights that were protected, supposedly, in the Constitution, Article 1 and Article 6. They were supposed to keep their rights and their sovereignty. And then George Washington wanted to give them an opportunity to come into the family as Americans while still being Indians. And so we invited the Cherokee Indians to come to talk to Congress in 1807. And they said yes, they attended. Five of the different groups came. The five tribes, Creek, Seminole, Choctaw, Chickasaw, that's it.
And Cherokee.
And Cherokee. So, Keith Nobles, tell us what happened in 1807.
Well, Major Ridge went to the White House. He told Thomas Jefferson. He was a Cherokee.
Okay, Major Ridge, okay.
Major Ridge. Actually, it wasn't quite Major Ridge. It was the Ridge. He got Major Ridge when he served in the American Army in the War of 1812.
Okay.
After that, he became known as Major Ridge. But he told Thomas Jefferson, we accept the offer to become Americans. And we set about working with the federal government on how do you make this reality. Washington and Jefferson were smart enough to understand that whatever the answer was going to be would be a tribe-by-tribe answer. There was no one-size-would-fit-all here. And so in 1811, we formed a republic. We reformed our entire culture entirely to comply with the Constitution, to comply with federal law. We set up a constitutional republic. We wrote a constitution modeled on the United States Constitution.
So now, Keith, is this a separate republic or would this be like a state?
Well, so that's a good question. And that's still a matter of debate.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So in 1832, in a case called Cherokee Nation v. Georgia, John Marshall would give us the definition that we were a domestic dependent nation. So we're intended to be an autonomous nation within the United States. We're not intended to have our own foreign policy. We're not intended to coin our own money.
So kind of like a state. Then.
But not quite like a state, but yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah,
okay.
But that's an interesting interesting point. I'll get back to that whole statehood thing.
Okay.
But we form a republic. We take this very seriously. Very seriously. We change our whole culture. We go along working with the federal government like this until the 1820s come along. And the 1820s is the rise of the Democrat Party in the United States. Democrat Party is founded on these twin pillars of the expansion of slavery and that Indians cannot live in proximity with white people. Within the Democrat...
The Democratic Party, huh?
Democrat Party.
Wow.
And within the Democrat Party, there is a debate on when you say Indians cannot live within proximity of white people, what does that mean? Part of the Democrat Party believes that means removal. We will take the Indians far out west where nobody will ever want to live. The other part of the Democrat Party believes that means extermination, that they should just kill all the Indians. Into this, the Cherokee, we recognize what this threat means to us.
Okay.
This is a mortal threat. We send three men to the United States, Elias Boudinot, John Ridge, and John Ross, and they will speak throughout much of the 1820s, any place that will let them speak, mostly churches, but universities and people's homes and town squares, all through the United States. And what they will do is just as noteworthy as what Martin Luther King Jr. would do 130 years later. And they will demand Cherokee equality. Huh. They will say we are equal by virtue of our shared humanity, and we are politically equal because we are a sovereign constitutional republic, and we demand an equal seat at the table with each and every other constitutional republic.
Wow.
And it's a compelling argument. Mm-hmm. It's the same argument, Cherokee Nation, same argument we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And it convinces a lot of people, especially in the churches. And mm-hmm. so they are highly successful at getting the Democrat Party to drop the idea of extermination. They are not successful at getting them to drop the idea of removal.
Oh.
And so in 1828, Andrew Jackson will be elected as the first Democrat president. In 1829, we will do something else nobody thought Indians could do, and we will send John Ross, who's our newly elected chief at that point, to address Congress and make another very compelling argument that Indian removal is not constitutional. We will lose that argument in 1830. Congress will pass the Indian Removal Act. Andrew Jackson will sign it. We will then do something else nobody thought we would do. We will turn around. We will sue. And the case will become known as Cherokee Nation v. Georgia, that these policies are unconstitutional because of Article 1 and Article 6.
Okay.
There's a twin case. This is really interesting. Called Wooster v. Georgia. So Georgia, throughout the 1820s into the 1830s, had attempted to eradicate the Cherokee.
And that was really, the Cherokee really were in Georgia. That was kind of...
So historically, our range was all of southern Appalachia, from western Virginia, eastern Kentucky, to northern Georgia, northern Alabama.
Okay.
By the time we come around to the United States, what we really have is western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee, northern Georgia, northern Alabama.
Okay. And is there one chief? So you said that...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have, and we're a republic. We elect a chief. We elect a vice chief. We elect a legislature. We have a Supreme Court, appeals court, district court. We are set up just like the United States.
To this day?
Yes, to this day.
Okay.
That's exactly how we operate to this day.
Okay.
But in the Wooster case, Georgia will pass these series of laws to attempt to eradicate the Cherokee, convince us to go elsewhere. These are really egregious
laws. Now, is that a removal or eradicate?
Well, they're trying to convince us to leave.
Okay.
So, for example, in the 1820s, they'll pass a law that no Cherokee can testify in court. And what that means in reality is if there's not a white man willing to testify against you, then any crime you commit against a Cherokee is fair game.
And so we're talking with Keith Nobles, who is Cherokee. So you're an expert on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So robbery, rape, murder, they were all open season on Cherokee in Georgia. And then Georgia will pass a law that makes it illegal for white people to help Cherokee.
Astonishing.
And that is aimed at missionaries. So unlike many Indian nations, Cherokee, we have an exquisite history with missionaries. And many of these missionaries helped us and gave us advice in dealing with Andrew Jackson and dealing with the state of Georgia. The state of Georgia is well aware of this. They passed laws forbidding the missionaries from helping us. So many of the missionaries will say, this is the law of the state, and we must obey the law of the state, and they will up and leave. Some of those missionaries will not. Some of those missionaries will say, I was called by God to help these people, and my calling from God supersedes the laws of man. Samuel Wooster would be one of those missionaries. Georgia would arrest those missionaries and imprison them, and it gets absolutely medieval. They would torture and beat them in order to compel them to recant that God called them to help the Cherokee. And if they would recant, they would release them from prison. And Samuel Wooster, being one of these missionaries, being imprisoned, will sue the state of Georgia. The court system recognizes these two cases brought by the Cherokee Nation and Samuel Wooster are really the same issue. Because they're really Article 1 and Article 6 issues.
Okay.
And they will go through the court system. The Supreme Court will basically hear them together. In the Wooster case, in 1832, the Supreme Court will unanimously uphold Article 1 and Article 6 and rule that what the state of Georgia is doing is unconstitutional and that Andrew Jackson and the Democrat Party's Indian removal policy is unconstitutional.
Okay.
We
victory.
Believe,
victory.
We believe we've won a great victory. Andrew Jackson will allegedly say, John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it. And the federal government, and consequently then the state of Georgia, following the lead of the federal government, will ignore that decision. So back to your question about the first time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time the federal government will knowingly, willingly, intentionally void the Constitution and just abandon it in regard to the Indians and specifically the Cherokee Nation.
Wow.
So the Supreme Court says it is unconstitutional for the government to take away the rights of American Indians.
Yes.
And the Democratic Party under Andrew Jackson says, let's just ignore it.
Yes, and that's what happens. There's no enforcement mechanism for John Marshall and the Supreme Court to enforce that decision.
What were the Republican Party legislators doing at that point?
Well, there weren't any.
Keith?
There were some Whigs, but there really weren't Republicans per se.
Mm-hmm.
And we had many friends. And so let me just advance a little bit, and you'll get a sense of this, because this causes a great division within the Cherokee Nation. Mm-hmm. We're united in this until the federal government ignores the decision.
Sure. Yeah.
And we're lost because we've accepted this invitation to become Americans. We took this serious. We took the Constitution seriously. We believed this decision would be abided by because this is how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And when the federal government, when Andrew Jackson failed to abide by that decision, in fact said, I'm just going to ignore it, we were at a loss of what to do. It caused a great deal of...
I'm sure it did a lot of division.
A lot of division. Eventually, it resulted in a civil war within the Cherokee Nation and what to do. But we would sign a treaty in 1835, the Treaty of Neosho-ta, ceding our lands in the east. It was quite an illegal treaty signed by one faction of the nation. It's a complicated mess. But to your point about upholding this, what we got back in the treaty was a promise of statehood.
So we're talking with Keith Nobles, and basically the point here is that the Indians trusted the federal government, the American federal government, that what they put in their constitution would rule regardless of what party and what president came to be. And that wasn't true. That's not what happened. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChick sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's Free Freedom Kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your Free Freedom Kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals. Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we are Sleuths for Truth. We are educating, inspiring, and encouraging people to engage. And we look at issues as right versus wrong, instead of right versus left. If you're sitting in traffic, you're lucky, because this has been such a fascinating show with Keith Nobles, Cherokee Indian, regarding the U.S. government and Indian policy. But Molly, I just want to know, how's your computer working?
It's off. It's terrible. Sometimes it turns on and works, and sometimes it just does a spinner around, 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 and I don't know what the heck's going on.
Well, you know, next month you're going to be in luck, because Evan, your IT guy, is going to be starting their business. And it's just really, it's a great concept. It's basically that, you know, if you need help, you can contact Evan, your IT guy, 24 hours a day. They do all kinds of different things as far as,
software, hardware, external drives, memory, everything.
You got it.
Email, accounts, whatever issue you have 24/7, you call these guys up and they're there. Yep. And they connect you with the right IT person.
Yes. And you know what? Go ahead and get signed up, because we got these handy dandy little covers for our webcam. And if you go to Evan, your IT guy, and put in your information, they will send you one of these, and then you will be ready to roll when they start to roll out the Evan, your IT guy, next month.
Yeah, I love it. The free webcam cover is awesome. So basically, to do that, go to evanyouritguy.com, go to Discover, and then free webcam cover, and click in there and put in your information. And mention the AmeriChicks as well. We want to say thank you to them for being one of our sponsors. They're the reason we're on the air.
You got
all
it.
All of our sponsors. Thanks to all of you.
You got it. And this show has been going by very quickly. Yep. We have Keith Nobles in studio with us. He's Cherokee Indian. We're talking about U.S. government, Indian policy, so take it from there, Keith.
And the first time that the federal government broke their promise, and that's why we want to make sure that the Constitution is always adhered to by our government, because the very first time they broke it, they hurt the American Indians, and they break it every day now, and they hurt us. So keep going, Keith.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so let me fast forward a little bit, because once the government has decided to void the Constitution, they won't return to it.
Right.
In regard to Indians. And what happens is our constitutional, not just for the Cherokee, but for all of the Indian nations, our constitutional rights will be replaced by whatever some politician, bureaucrat, or social scientist thinks is a good idea. And Congress will consistently behave in a manner that makes life easier for Congress and harder for Indians. That's very much the consistent pattern. So in 1871, they will pass a writer-owned appropriations bill called the End of Treaties. Even though the Constitution calls for us to be treated with treaties, they will decide they will no longer treat Indians with treaties. And what this means is treaties, no matter how unfair the negotiation may have been between the Indian nation and the federal government, at least it was a negotiation and the Indians could always say no. After 1871 until today, the federal government deals with Indians via legislation, which means they simply dictate to the Indian nations what they want them
because
to
because there
do.
Is no representation.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Wow.
Right. We're about 2% of the population. In a few places, Alaska, parts of New Mexico, Arizona, Oklahoma, Indians are a meaningful electoral group. Other than that.
Oh, they do vote?
Yes.
Do. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Other than that, we're really not any place else a meaningful
okay.
electoral mass. So
no longer treaties.
No more treaties after 1871. Congress will realize as the frontier starts to close and they have assigned great swaths of land to Indians via treaty that they really don't want to honor those treaties anymore, and they will take that land back. The most famous of those was a Ryder-Doan Appropriations Bill in 1877 called Sell or Die, in which Congress instructed the federal government to purchase back the land from the Indians they had assigned them in a treaty, and if they refused to sell, to be the instrument of their death, to kill them if they wouldn't sell. That's the basis of actually the DAPL pipeline.
Sell or die.
Sell or die.
Kind of like the buy health insurance or be taxed.
Yeah.
But,
sell your land
grave,
or we will kill you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We go through the Dawes Act in 1888. They take all the common land and assign it to Indians as individual plots, which may not sound like too bad an idea, but what the Dawes Act does is introduce a concept. You know, how much blood are you, Indian blood? That's not an Indian concept. That's a United States government concept. And the way it works is if the government deems you are half Indian or more by blood, you're assigned a guardian.
And where do you think Elizabeth Warren would come in on this?
At zero.
Yeah.
But basically, the way it worked is a guardian managed all your affairs. You were not allowed to manage your own affairs. And
big,
it was
brother,
just
huh?
fraud.
It's a disaster.
It was just fraud because you say you had a property worth $1,000, your guardian would sell it to his buddy for $10, and then the buddy would sell it for $1,000, and the guardian and his buddy would split the profits. The Indian got $10. That happened hundreds of thousands of times, and it greatly impoverished Indians for generations. And we had the Curtis Act, which the government said they were just going to get rid of the legal status of Indian and all Indian nations in 1894. In 1907, they amended that with the Burke Act, in which they decided they keep the framework of Indian nations around. But this is a real kicker. The governments of the Indian nations would no longer be coming from the people of those nations. The White House would appoint whomever it wanted to negotiate with.
For the Bureau of
Indian
Affairs.
On the behalf of the nations.
Okay.
So...
Well, Keith, this has been fascinating, and we're getting close to out of time. So we've got probably about 3 or 4 minutes. Yeah. There's got to be a solution.
Well, you know, Mark Wayne Mellon and Tom Cole, the only two Indians in Congress, they're both from Oklahoma. Congressman Cole is a Chickasaw, and Congressman Mellon is a Cherokee, have been trying to get traction to restore Article I sovereignty of the nations, which was taken away by the Roosevelt administration in the 1930s. That's why you see so much poverty on these Indian nations. The federal government for those nations, which were almost all of them, I know the Cherokee and Osage did not reorganize under those acts. Nearly every other Indian nation did. They reorganized, were forced to reorganize as corporations with the Bureau of Indian Affairs as their board of directors. So many of these nations, you can't get a job without federal government permission. You cannot start a business without federal government permission. It's truly terrible. I mean, they're serfs for all intents and purposes. I mean, people, if you go to the Cherokee Nation, the Creek Nation, places like this, people say they don't even know they're on tribal land, looks like everywhere else. People go to some of these tribal lands and things are truly awful. And they'll say, well, why don't these people do something about this? And the point is, they can't.
It's public policy.
They can't. They are serfs of the federal government. They can't get a job. They can't start a business. They live where the federal government tells them where they have to live. It's truly terrible. And the first step here is restoring Article I sovereignty.
Okay.
So people can run their own affairs.
Okay. So sovereignty for where they live.
Sovereignty for the tribal lands.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
And tell us about this upcoming Denver American Indian Festival.
Well, so the Denver American Indian Festival is September 30th, October 1st. So mark your calendars. It's on 128th, half a block west of Colorado. So if you find 128th in Colorado, you can find it. It's free. There's no cover charge. There's no admission. So I'm part of the group of people that organized this as citizens and enrolled members of over 50 Indian nations participate. Goes Saturday and Sunday. We have dancing, storytelling, drumming, singing. We have 50 vendors. We have art. We have crafts. We have food. It's a great family event. It's got a really, really good vibe.
You have a roller coaster?
No.
Shoot.
No.
Okay.
Well,
well
you know, we talked about a lot of things the insurance company axed.
So that's good. Yeah. Okay. So, but the call to action is we want Congressman Tom Cole and Mark Wayne Mullen to hopefully bring forward legislation that's going to restore Article I sovereignty to the Indian nation.
Yes. And if people can get a hold of Senator Gardner, Congressman Tipton, Lamborn, Kaufman, all these people and say, just go over and ask those guys, what can we do to help you? What can we do to get this going? That was probably the best thing people can do right now to start to remedy this situation.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that you would get bipartisan support on this? What are you hearing out there?
Honestly, D.C. is such a mess. We can't even repeal Obamacare.
Right.
I mean, in the idea of, this is on no one's electoral radar. It is purely and completely only on people's moral radar. Mm-hmm. It's a moral argument. There's no votes in this for Mike Kaufman, mm-hmm. right? It's just simply the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard to get government to give back the power once they have taken it away.
Yes.
What about the Article 5 Convention of States? Have you thought about that?
I've had conversations with those people. Like, well, you go fix everything else, and I'll go fix the Indian stuff. I'll be good.
Okay.
But restoring sovereignty of the nations and fulfilling the treaties is really not as big a deal as the detractors like to say. Okay. We can do this, but it means the federal government has to cede power, and that's the hitch.
Well, then what about, just a quick question, though, because my understanding was some of the Indian nations were against, like, the Keystone Pipeline.
Sure.
So tell me about how that would work.
Well, that's a great example. See, the land the Keystone Pipeline runs across was part of the Treaty of 1851, which the federal government took back by the Sell or Die Act.
Okay.
That finally worked its way into the Supreme Court in 1980, 103 years later. And the Supreme Court ruled it was unlawful and unconstitutional for the federal government to take that land. So what happened was the federal government said, well, we'll pay you for it. And they put money, which is over $1 billion, into an account. And the Lakota have refused to accept the money. Lakota said, our constitutional rights aren't for sale. We want Article 1 and Article 6. We don't want your money. And so that was the underlying basis of what happened there with the Dakota Access Pipeline. And it will be the underlying basis of what will happen if they build the Keystone Pipeline, because they run across tribal lands from treaties that the United States now refuses to honor, the Indian nations demand they honor.
Mm. And with private property rights, if you did properly own that land, and you, as you should,
yeah,
you would be able to be paid mineral rights.
Sure. And this is an important point, because when we're talking about sovereignty in the treaty land, we're not talking about taking back private property. We're purely talking about government jurisdiction. Which government has jurisdiction over that land? For example, DAPL, is it the state of North Dakota, the federal government, or the Lakota government? And by Article 6 and Article 1, it's the Lakota government that should have jurisdiction. Government jurisdiction over that land.
Mm-hmm. So the Constitution is important not only to the Indians, also to all Americans, and let's make sure that we keep our government in check. So check out Keith Noble's website, insurgenttribe.com, and let's just always make sure that we're holding our government accountable to what they're supposed to do. And if you don't know what the government's supposed to do, check out the Constitution. It's written right there. It's a really, really short read.
Definitely. And we had this great quote from Elias Boutinot, a speech in 1826, ready to go. And I don't think we're going to have time to get it all out there, but I'm going to give it a whirl. Okay. He says, what is an Indian? Is he not formed of the same materials with yourself? For one blood, God created all the nations that dwell on the face of the earth. I've had greater advantages than most of my race, and I now stand before you, delegated by my native country, to seek her interests, to labor for her respectability, and by my public efforts to assist in raising her to an equal standing with other nations of the earth. That was 1826. There's another great paragraph of that. We'll get that up on the website.
This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, on KDMT every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. We'll see you here tomorrow night, same place.